and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Yes, here we are. It's day 9 of Challenge 2015. But guess what? Tonight, we have our phones so you can participate in this discussion. Now, if you walk back through the headlines about the University of Hawaii, clearly the school has had its controversies, from the antics of former President Evan Dobell through the latest standoff over the 30-meter telescope. The UH system has had an often trouble-laden 15 years. But the UH system is still the state's only public institution of higher education. And for many Hawaii families, it's the system that will continue to be the only affordable choice. So what do we want from the U? What would make it the school of choice? Tonight, we'll talk it over with David Lassner, president of the 10-campus University of Hawaii system, UH Board of Regents Chair Randy Moore, and UHPA incoming executive director Chris Hanselman. Of course, you're invited to participate in that conversation because the phone lines are open at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. That's to call and be part of the conversation. And you don't even have to pledge unless you want to. You're going to have to call a different number to do that. Tonight, it's conversation right here on Town Square about the future of UH. Thank you all for being here.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It was one of those shows that took us almost 4 months to be able to get everyone's schedule to align. And I'm glad you were able to make time for this, because we've seen over time that there have been a lot of issues with UH. As you look at the school system now, and in particular looking at Manoa separately, how do you characterize UH as you look at it in April of 2015, David Lassner?
Well, Beth Ann, I'd have to say that normally inside the university, we don't approach it from the point of view of what the headlines have been, as you have done. In general, we're not thinking about what happened 15 years ago, but rather what we're doing today, which is educating students, conducting great research, and serving the people of Hawaii. And unfortunately, that's not a great headline. It doesn't sell ads. And so that's why we're here today, to talk about what we're really doing.
Well, for a lot of people, though, as you know, people tend to carry negative information with them at a higher rate than they do positive information. And so in trying to not necessarily balance out, but look at some sense of reality as the three of you see it, I'm curious, Randy Moore, what do you see when you look at the UH system?
I see a robust higher educational system. From community colleges to four-year colleges to a research university. Students are wrapping up the second semester. Exams are about to begin. So students are learning. Researchers are researching. And life goes on well at the university.
Chris Hanselman, you have maybe a different perspective.
I think it's a different perspective in the sense that perhaps it's captured by having arrived here in 2007. One of the issues that was facing me was UH is a work in progress. And I think we still hear that UH is a work in progress. There's been many changes. There has been relayering of responsibilities. There has been a tremendous shift in faculty. So we're now looking at a group of 4,000 members where the demographics have profoundly changed since 2007.
How have they changed?
Right now we're looking at about 35% of our faculty being below the age of 40. And we have another 30% or so that are above the age of 60. It's like looking and representing a barbell. And the needs and the aspirations of those groups are very, very different. And so the discussion about the future of UH is very, very different, in part driven by their demographics. Over that time, we are also now primarily female when it comes to the academic faculty members. We have gone from being primarily male in 2007 to now being about 54% female and younger. And so that adds a dimension about what we want out of our institution that we haven't fully explored yet. I think it's tremendous. I think it gives us tremendous opportunities to have a different, more bold discussion about who do we want to be.
The fact that you're now saying that 54% of the faculty younger, female. That's not usually something we hear when we talk about the UH. Why do you think that hasn't quite migrated into the public sphere?
You know, I'm not sure. I think the issues that we find, and interestingly enough, many of the issues that we are asked about as a union are ones about family and economic security. It's not a matter of I have a grievance. It is, what is my future here? As a consequence, some of the issues that get articulated over and over again is concern about how do we value our families. This is a high-cost area, and with the large number of younger faculty, the issue of child care and family care is at play all the time. I don't know what education I will have for my child. I can't afford Punahou. I don't know how I can afford housing. If I receive tenure after 5 years, can I afford housing? Similarly, on the other age spectrum, those that are over 60, they are like the inside of the sandwich. They're the tuna fish. Because on one end, they may have aspiring college students in their homes, and on the other hand, they have parents to be concerned about and to take over the responsibility for their care while still being a good faculty member, teaching, doing research, and their community service. So these are the kinds of discussions that I think put a more holistic approach to what are the kinds of things we need to do that make our institution a better institution by our care and our concern about our employees, but also what does it mean for us in dealing with broader issues of public policy.
To both of you, to Randy Moore and to David Lastner, you just heard what Chris Hanselman had to say. These are issues of not just stability for the university, but also being able to draw faculty to the university and have some staying power with all of that. The fact that you have this barbell, a lot of younger folks on one end, a lot of older folks on the other end, how do you create a strategy that works for both and keeps both happy?
Well, as Chris knows well, the way this is done is through collective bargaining. We have a unionized faculty. So on matters of employment, we work directly with UPA as the recognized bargaining agent for our faculty. On matters relating to academics that are not about conditions of employment, we work with our faculty senates. And we're committed to creating an environment that supports our employees. Some of the issues that Chris talked about, those are things that through our last collective bargaining agreement, we agreed to work on together, such as childcare, such as housing. And that's a robust and challenging discussion that we'll have face to face.
Randy Moore.
Well, clearly a university is not a university without faculty. So as David said, there's a mechanism for addressing faculty concerns, but it's also not a university without students. And so there always needs to be a balance between what's best for the students, what's best for the faculty, what's best for the institution going forward. Chris mentioned that the university is a work in progress, and indeed, I suspect every good organization is a work in process because you are never so good that you don't need to improve. The university has improved, is improving, will continue to improve. The day you stop improving is the day you start dying.
There were years when we saw faculty leaving where they just said, enough. I mean, we sort of watched people that we had been dealing with go away. No more journalism school, per se, but how is it then you see the future moving as you're trying to attract quality faculty, quality students, balancing all of that, as Randy, you're just trying to say that, you know, it's not going to be a university system without students, and not have it feel that, you know, somebody's going to have to give a little bit somewhere. Where is that point where you think that there has to be perhaps some compromise?
Actually, we had a very successful collective bargaining session. In fact, in terms of the employer relationship with the faculty. We have the earliest settlement last year in the history of collective bargaining, I believe, in the state. I'm so advised by Jan Musto, who is a historian of collective bargaining here, among many other things. So it is a very, you know, at this point, it's not always cordial, but it certainly has been at this point. What I would say and is that university faculty, this is a national profession. So we are drawing, particularly at UH Manoa, we are recruiting and competing for the best and brightest and most promising across the country. So we don't expect to have all faculty staying here for life. We certainly hope to keep our best and brightest here for their entire careers. But there is a natural ebb and flow of faculty across the country, and great universities compete for great faculty, and that's part of what we have to do. And that's part of what we do in our work with UPA to create conditions that attract great faculty.
If you're just joining us tonight on Town Square, no, we are not recorded. This is, in fact, a live show, usually during the Fun Drive. I know you're used to hearing a best-of show, but tonight, because of the magic of all things, we were able to have a live conversation with UH President David Lastner, Board of Regents Chair Randy Moore, and Chris Hanselman, incoming Executive Director of UPA, and you. And the phone lines are open for your use tonight to be able to join this conversation on Town Square. So if you are currently a student at UH, if you graduated from UH, if you teach at UH, if you're really interested in UH and you want to be part of this conversation, the phone lines are open, 941-3689. If you call us from Oahu, that's the number to use. If you call us from the neighbor islands, 1-877, then the 941-3689 will get you to us. And that number also works if you are on the mainland, 941-3689, to be able to join the conversation tonight on Town Square. So from your perception, this is a better situation that you've had with faculty than you've had in recent memory, David Lastner?
Well, certainly the collective bargaining situation is as good as it gets.
Chris Hanselman.
The early settlement, I think, was a gift to all of us because we did not really want to go into a different administration, a different legislation, whereby issues of conflict would be the driver in terms of the relationship between UH and the legislature and the governor and UHPA. Bargaining here is pretty interesting. It is interesting because it is unique in the country. It is a multi-party, which means you really have to have pretty open and honest discussions in order to come to closure. The good news about when you have a multi-party and you are successfully able to execute a contract is that folks want to make sure it works. There's a greater vested interest in making sure that the relationship is maintained. And I think all of us sitting around here know that sometimes we can be testy. All of us can be with one another. But we do try to work things out.
But is the relationship now different? Because once upon a time, David Lastner, you were in the faculty and of the faculty.
Actually, I was a staff member.
Well,
separate bargaining unit, but
okay.
But yeah.
But in other words, you weren't president. You were dealing with things at a very different level. In some ways,
yes.
In the ways that some at the Ledge have said that they've learned to create a new relationship with now Governor Ige than when he was Ways and Means Chair and long time in the Ledge, that it's changing and that part of learning how to deal with each other now is to look at each other in a different way. Do you all now have to look at David Lastner differently, Chris Hanselman, than you did before, and vice versa?
I think from my perspective, we knew David, obviously, dealing with tech. But now he is more, and now he is the big cheese. And so as a consequence, you sort of have to feel your way through what are the strengths that we can draw on in our relationship that may be historic, which is probably, you know, me having called David and going, I can't get online on campus, to, in fact, the broader issues we have which are of mutual interest. And there are a variety. I mean, we've talked about things like the housing and the family care, where I believe that UH and UHPA can start being leaders in driving a very robust debate for our state. We are not alone in those issues. Similarly, there are issues such as the differing kinds of learning environments that our students have. It is the faculty's interest. It is other employee groups' interests, our APTs, our secretaries, to have good working conditions. And we know that there is a backlog as it relates to the infrastructure of our institutions. Good infrastructure also drives good learning practices and good opportunities for students.
Well, you've brought it around to, you know, the next point is looking at the physical plant, because for years we've heard buildings are crumbling, there are problems with being able to get online, there's aging infrastructure all around, that it just isn't something that is befitting a school in 2015 that wants to go out there and aggressively be a wonderful system within this, the state, and also attract students from elsewhere. All that said, as you look at the school now and you see the physical plant and the backlog and now issues with the student union and other things that have been happening, how do you look at that and say, well, this school is making progress in terms of its physical plant?
So the deferred maintenance backlog has been a huge concern and priority for the administration and for the regents. The structure of this state means that the university can make little progress without the support of the legislature. If they can either fund the infrastructure as we have requested as our highest priority, or they can enable us to fund it ourselves using tuition to support the borrowing of funds. For the last 2 years, the legislature has not been willing to support either of those approaches. So we continue to advocate for either fund it or tell us you won't fund it and let us apply tuition to borrow money to make the upgrades necessary for 21st century facilities for teaching, learning, and scholarship.
Randy Moore, obviously the regents have an overview of all this and where you'd like to see the school go. As you look at physical plant and what you've just heard David say and what you heard Chris say a moment ago, how do you create a strategy given the fact that, as David says, it's beholden to the ledge to be able to get that money or not?
Well, 21st century facilities, which we have some of but not enough of, are one of the strategic initiatives of the university. The four strategic initiatives are: we need to get students into school, through school, graduating on time. We need to be an economic driver as well as a knowledge driver through research and innovation. We need to have 21st century facilities for both faculty and students and staff, as Chris points out. And we need to have a system that performs well. So facilities are one of the four strategic priorities of the university and of the board. And as David pointed out, we need legislative approval to spend money to fix it. In fairness to the legislature, they are facing financial demands from K-12 education, from the state hospital system, from the funding of Medicaid, from the funding of pensions and post-retirement health care costs of public employees, and from our prison costs. So except for the university, those other areas, they don't have a whole lot of discretion. And so traditionally, and this is not unique to Hawaii, traditionally legislatures, when times are tough, reduce their support for higher education. We're not any different than the rest of the country, but it doesn't mean that we don't need to figure out a way to make it happen.
All right, I want to talk to you about funding in just a second, but to remind everyone that tonight we are live. It is the 23rd of April, 2015. This is not a recorded show. We are here in the studio with UH President David Lastner, the chair of the Board of Regents, Randy Moore, and the incoming executive director of UPA, Chris Hanselman, and you too. And if you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open for your use, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We're talking about the future of UH. So far, has what you've heard matched up with your idea of where you think UH should go? If you are a former faculty member of UH, a current faculty member, if you have attended UH, might be attending UH, if you have any connection at all and you have a question, we've got a good panel tonight to be able to answer your question. We are live. It is in real time, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I think everybody's so conditioned to the fact that usually during the fund drive, these are recorded shows that they're wondering as we're talking whether we're live or not.
We're creating a best of for the future for you,
Well, perhaps that may be so, David. That may be so. But as you talk about funding, is the way in which the UH is funded now the way that is appropriate for it? I mean, there has been some discussion about let's just lump sum it, give it to you, and let the chips fall where they may, as if it were a business. This is it. You management is responsible, and that's the end of it. And move the ledge away from so much oversight.
So there are two questions embedded there. One is how the funding is allocated in a lump sum or into specific pots for specific projects. The university is willing, and we're on public record, embracing the responsibility to allocate if the legislature should choose to lump fund, allocate the funds. But lump fund allocations, lump sum allocations, are not a substitute for an adequate level of funding. And Randy is absolutely right that our legislature faces huge challenges. We do have some level of discretion with the ability to generate tuition, and we're working hard to generate other sources of revenue. That said, over the past 5 years, the state appropriations per full-time student in Hawaii have dropped faster than most of the country. Now, this is a national problem. Funding for public higher education has been shrinking, particularly through the recession period. But because of our enrollment growth since the recession, a period in which UH increased enrollment by about 20%, increased graduations by about 25%, while budgets were shrinking, has put enormous stress on our system. And that's, as Randy talks about and you talk about, a work in progress. That's much of what we have to cope with, is a new normal in funding. And for us, that means increasing reliance on tuition and other sources of funds.
All right, we're going to pick this up in just a second. Right now, we're going to go see what Jennifer, calling us from Waikoloa, has to say. Aloha, Jennifer. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes, hi. I have been dealing with having a daughter that's going into the University of Manoa this year. We live on the Big Island, and we're trying to come up with funds for tuition and housing. And really what my question was is, does the money that goes into housing go into the same big pie as the money for tuition in order to fund the school? Because it's about the same tuition and housing.
No. The housing is a special fund. And so the funds that are paid into that stay with the housing, and they support the housing program. The tuition goes into a bigger bucket on each campus or in each of our academic units that supports the infrastructure, faculty, electricity bills, libraries, and the overall operations and academic support of the campus, along with the state general funds.
So is housing actually run by the school then?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But those funds are appropriated to be able to take care of the housing and to be able to...
They're allocated specifically.
Right.
So
right.
The housing bill
goes... So
there's
no commingling.
It doesn't go... The housing funds don't go to support the library, the chancellor, the faculty. It's supporting the housing program.
All right, Jennifer. Thank you so much.
One more quick question.
Go ahead.
If we should not be able to come up with the funds for housing, if you're accepted into Manoa, are you able to do like a distance learning, online learning, and get the same classes?
You got a worried parent here.
Yes.
So a distance learning experience is different than a residential experience. We have many, many online and distance learning programs available throughout the state, some via interactive television, some via cable TV, and much more via online. So if you go to www.hawaii.edu/DL for distance learning, you can get a feel for what's available. But another really great option, and you know, Randy talked about being a high-performance system, one of the things that the University of Hawaii is as good at as any university system in this country, and as public higher education does as well as any state in this country, is we create learning pathways so that you can start at a community college, which is affordable and on every island, and aim toward transferring to a four-year institution, UH Hilo, UH West Oahu, or UH Manoa.
All right. There you go, Jennifer. Thanks for the call. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689, which is the number that Jennifer just called to be able to reach us from the Big Island. Yes, we are live tonight. I know, big surprise. We tried to send out a couple of promos to let you know that that was happening. But yes, tonight we're having a conversation about the future of UH. What do you want to see? I mean, for a long time, there are people who have looked at it and said, what's the matter with you? And how do we change that perception? What is it if you've attended, if you've been a faculty member, if you've had any relationship with UH at all? What do you think about the future of UH? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Picking up what we were talking about a little while ago with the funding issues. Funding and oversight, those who give money usually want to have oversight. Does the legislature have too much oversight over the UH system? Randy Moore. Well, I'll let you do that one first, as you're the regent chair.
Oh, that's kind of a hot potato. I think legislators, because they are the stewards of the taxpayers' money, are understandably interested in what the university does, how successful it is. So from a taxpayer's perspective, it is appropriate for the legislature to have oversight. The question is, what is the depth of that oversight?
And what does it look like?
Yes. In most cases, I think it's appropriate. There are some where, and I'm just speaking for myself, I say, you know, they're going a little bit too far into the weeds. But
Where do they go too far in the weeds when you look at it?
I don't want to get people mad at me.
How do we have a conversation about that?
Well, I think legislators who go too far into the weeds would acknowledge that they're into the weeds, but they have a passion for something, and they pursue it, and I can't blame them.
For those who think, though, that somehow that the errant UH system needs to be corrected and needs to have more oversight. I mean, we've been through episodes of that before because of things that have happened, which gave them, in some cases, very good reason to believe that the UH wasn't a well-run operation that was able to create accountability and knew what left hands and right hands were doing, all of that. But then it seemed to be in the other direction, too, that maybe some of that became overly punitive. The Wonder Blender issue and others aside, has there been too much sort of a punitive perspective coming from the ledge?
I'm going to speak to the period of time since I became interim president and then uninterim president. I would say the relationship, you know, that was a tough year, no doubt about it. It was better last year than the year before. It is better this year than last year. And I think, you know, we have to rebuild trust. And I hope that, you know, someday somebody will talk about Stevie Wonder in this state without reference to that particular incident, which was unfortunate. And more unfortunate than the incident was the fallout to the institution and what happened throughout the state.
Picking up on that, Chris Hanselman, go ahead.
I think there's been an imbalance in the relationship between the legislature and the UH. And I think David is correct that there has been issues of trust, and what we see legislatively is irritants. And we see legislation that incorporates irritants into it to remind us. Faculty sometimes view themselves as collateral damage in these kinds of discussions. On one hand, yeah, the university could deal with a lump sum distribution, but part of the lump sum distribution discussion was, in fact, designed to be somewhat punitive, and it doesn't reflect the robust funding we really need to recapture who we need to be as an institution to provide for our citizens. And so I think that the relationship should be more closely aligned with UH interests and the legislative interests, but we aren't there yet. And I think part of that is, in fact, regained by the boldness with which UH can, in fact, do what it needs to do to reorganize, to cast a different kind of activity in these islands that, in fact, take people by surprise, that take the legislatures and the legislature goes, wait, we never thought they had this capacity to do this. And yet they're moving forward and they're doing it. Over the last couple of years, what I have noted in our own faculty ranks is faculty are incredibly entrepreneurial. And they are very concerned. And where they can, they are actively engaged in a highly competitive environment to bring more monies into the institution. And the competitive nature right now of external funding, whether it be federal funding, whether it be from private sources, whether it be from NIH, is an incredibly competitive environment. It is very tough to initiate. It is very tough to sustain. And yet our researchers and our instructional faculty that also do a great deal of grant writing are being quite successful. And it is because they have become quite adept at maneuvering around what might be the punitive nature, recognizing that the health of the institution means that they need to find various pathways to continue to contribute.
Has that put an unfair burden on them?
I think it's a tough burden because for many who are not tenured faculty, for them to maintain their jobs, they must have external funding. And we have faculty that have brought in external funding well over $30 million over their careers. We have others that are truly working researchers and instructional faculty that every year bring in $1 million to $2 million very steadily. To get that money, it used to be they would write maybe 3 to 4 proposals for grants. Now what researchers and instructional faculty are telling me is it's taking 15 to 16 to obtain the same external funding that they are getting.
So how does that square with giving students a good education if they're now having to spend a lot more time writing these grants?
So let me just say a couple of things. One is that in the aggregate, let me echo Chris's comment and say our faculty are bringing in the range of about $400 million a year into the state, stimulates the economy, and addresses the challenges and opportunities of our state. Most of this research is tied to activities and needs within Hawaii. So we have, again, back to the richness and diversity of our university system. Our community colleges are primarily teaching institutions, and they also bring in large amounts of research grants. At Manoa, which is a research university, one of the fine research universities of this country, the research that the faculty are performing is part of what makes their teaching so special. So these are faculty who are pushing the frontiers of human knowledge in their discipline, and they bring that into the classroom, and their students are working in the labs with them. And that's what creates a rich learning environment for our best and brightest who attend UH Manoa.
But how does that offset what Chris is saying if all of these faculty members are now writing more grants, that means spending maybe
this
more time.
This is the nature of the academic enterprise in which they've chosen.
They have to expect to do it.
They have to do it. It's going on all over the country. This is not special Manoa.
Right. And this is very similar to what we heard within journalism when a lot of reporters are saying, what do you mean I have to tweet and I have to post on Facebook and I have to do all the other social media when I'm trying to write a story? Yeah. You're just saying that just becomes the nature of the job.
That's the nature of the job. And you know, I talked earlier about the pretty systemic disinvestment of states across this country in public higher education. And similarly, the federal government has been decreasing investment in research dollars. And that decrease in federal dollars for research is part of what's driving the increased competitiveness for faculty at UH and across the country. We're incredibly proud of our faculty. Our research has stayed very stable relative to many other institutions that have not fared as well in this much more competitive environment.
All right, we're going to go now to Bill calling us from Kona. And if you'd like to be next, we are live tonight on this Thursday, April 23rd, 2015, day 9 of Challenge 2015. See all those references that tell you we're live and we're here. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Talking about the future of UH with President David Lastner, the chair of the UH Board of Regents, Randy Moore, and Chris Hanselman, the incoming executive director from UPA and U. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Aloha, Bill. Welcome to Town Square.
Oh, hello, Professor.
Hello. Not really a professor, but...
I'm sorry. I was just wondering why the huge salaries for administrators and sports director with escape clauses happened.
All right, well, let's take that up. That's the one thing that we haven't gotten to yet, but it's only halfway through the show. We can go to athletics. There's been a lot of discussion, and thank you, Bill, for bringing up the question, about athletics at UH and what purposes it serves, which departments are doing well, what's the whole purpose of football when you can't fill a stadium even, you know, a quarter of the way or half the way. All of those questions that people have been asking for quite a while now. Obviously, changes within the athletic department, a new AD coming in just a few days. All of that, as you look at the athletic department, and obviously you don't want to bash it, I understand that, but is there any real valuable discussion happening about the value of athletics as we see it now? Not having athletics at UH, but what it should be. What does that look like going forward that more aligns with public interest? Randy Moore.
Okay, for the Regents, we had a board retreat last November, and the purpose of that is to step back and look at the whole thing from 30,000 feet and say, where should we get ourselves out of the weeds and on what should we focus more of our energy? And we identified five topics for what we called a deep dive, to have a serious conversation about the kinds of things you talk about. What is the significance of this to the university? What are the long-term trends? How do we respond to them? Where's the value in this?
Are people interested in it?
All of that. And one of those five topics was intercollegiate athletics, which we will talk about at depth in August, and the kind of questions that you raised will come up, as David and Chancellor Robert Blyvorman and others have said. The University of Hawaii at Manoa's athletic teams are really state sports teams. We don't have any professional sports teams here. We don't have the Giants or the Dodgers or whatever. So the University of Hawaii is it. So there is a value to the community that is added through the intercollegiate program that is greater than to the university community all by itself.
If they turn up for it and actually support it, right?
Well, actually, if you go to the football game, there are probably more non-students. There are more non-students there than there are students. So it is clearly...
No, I mean, generally, not just students, but generally by the public, whether it's someone who just loves to go to the games because we don't have a professional team here or not, but really being able to judge whether the amount of money being spent in the athletic department is commensurate with the interest in students and the public and people who would go there to spectate and enjoy it.
all of that is appropriate for discussion, yes, and we'll have that conversation with among
in
ourselves
August.
In August.
That means you and I will be talking in September, right?
Well, I'll be happy to have the invitation.
I just do want to say one thing, Bethann. The football team actually makes money. That program makes money. The challenge that we have had is that even most of the really popular sports don't make money. And so the football team, it isn't that it is losing money. It is that it isn't making enough money to make up for the losses associated with some of the other sports.
So that goes back to the public interest part.
Exactly. What I mean, as we have this conversation, and it's a UH Manoa sports program, I should say we have a very fine athletics program at UH Hilo. Not in the news very much, but great local athletes, great community interest. And it's just not as dramatic when you don't have daily newspapers and TV stations that are very focused on this. And as a journalist, I think it's kind of interesting that we have more sports journalists covering UH than we have education or research journalists covering UH. And that's a sign, as Randy said, of the community's interest in UH athletics, absent any professional sports anywhere within 2,000 miles.
All right, Bill, thanks very much for bringing this up. Do you want to weigh in on any of this, or can we move on?
You can move on.
Oh, thank you. All right, we've got Kelu calling us from Mililani. If you'd like to be next, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We are live tonight discussing where should UH go as it moves into the future? What do you see when you envision our state school system? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Kelo calling us from Mililani. Thanks for your patience.
Hi. Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
No pleasure.
And my question is basically about the community colleges. First, I really love Hawaii Systems, UH, the community college. But I have a question about some of the future classes that you are looking at, or the plans for the night classes in community colleges, because basically I take some classes in Leeward Community College. Also, I work full-time. So nighttime and weekends actually works the best for me and schedule-wise. So I was wondering, what's UH System's plan for on the nighttime or weekend class?
All right. Thanks very much for the question. She's looking at, you know, is there going to be a build-out of class schedules and class types for people who are working and are trying to be working professionals, doing professional development, or maybe trying to make a career transition?
So we do. Most of our campuses do have evening classes, most of our community colleges. I think we have fewer weekend classes. I'd also pitch the opportunity to be taking online classes. And the good thing about those is if they work for you, then you can do that at any time of the day, and you don't have to do it at the same time each day. And we find that's working really well for students who have irregular schedules with work that actually prevent them from doing almost anything on a scheduled basis, or who have unpredictable childcare or elder care responsibilities. But if you have a specific request, if you shoot an email in or give a call, we can follow up and see if there's an opportunity for the specific program that you're interested in, and whether there's a great opportunity to obtain your degree primarily evenings and weekends.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Randy, go ahead.
If I could add to that, it is definitely in the university's interest, first of all, to be responsive to student demand. When we need to offer classes when students would like to take them. And the more we can fit into the evenings and weekends, the better we utilize our facilities. If we only hold classes from 9 to noon, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we need a lot more facilities than if we're opening those classrooms, if not 24/7, maybe 16/7. So it's really in the university's interest, in the taxpayers' interest, in the community's interest, meets the student needs. We would like to do that whenever there is demand.
That's also going to mean an increase of overhead. Obviously, you're going to have to be doing a lot of balancing to see if some of this is possible given
right. We need the critical mass for in-person classes.
The sense of it, right? Because it's still going to cost you a pretty penny to keep those lights on before you even put a teacher in
right.
the classroom.
We've got to have a teacher in the classroom, and we've got to have a critical mass of students for the particular program on the particular campus.
Yes.
All right, we're going to go to Rita calling us from Makawao. Aloha, Rita. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show tonight. My question is general. It is regarding the increased concern about the rate of sexual abuse on campuses across the nation. And what is UH doing on its various campuses to address this issue? And if they are, what are the statistics of sexual abuse on the UH campuses? And could you share that with us if you know what that is?
All right. Thanks very much for the question. Didn't have a chance to get there yet. Love you that you guys are paying attention and have good and important questions.
So I apologize, Rita. I do not have the numbers in front of me at this very minute. We actually have to report those to the federal government in what are called our Clery Act reports. It's a federal requirement. So each year, each of our campuses reports those. I believe you can find them on the campus websites, and the federal government also makes them available through the U.S. Department of Education. When I looked at the numbers, I believe that there were a single-digit number of sexual assaults reported at UH Manoa, and I don't believe single-digit, nine, okay, single-digit, in general, that is much lower than the often reported statistic that is not really a statistic that one sees. More importantly, I think, is thinking about what we're doing about it. And this is very high priority for us. We have trained the regents. We have trained the administration. We are training the faculty and students. That's a big part of it, to raise awareness of the problem. A second area where we need, and we have already updated our policies, that was done this spring to make it clear. In our case, we adopted a policy called what is called affirmative consent, meaning in a decade or two ago, we talked about no means no. And now what we talk about is requiring affirmative consent for sexual activity between two individuals rather than silence means consent. And as we educate people about that policy, we need to find different ways of reaching them through online training, through signage, through special events. A third area where we need to work is our response systems, so that if an incident occurs, we have a place and everyone understands what to do about it. Where do you get help? Who do you report it to? And that includes, in fact, identifying, it turns out under the federal law, pretty much any responsible person to whom an incident is reported has an obligation to make sure that gets filtered to our, what we call Title IX is the federal law that lays out many of these requirements. This is an area, you know, we've talked about the legislative interest, where the legislative interest, the university interest are completely aligned. We're delighted that this is something that the university asked for resources to do a better job across the UH system. And, you know, knock on wood, we're at the end game with the legislative session. But so far, we believe the legislature is very interested in supporting improvements across the entire UH system.
Rita, thanks very much for the question. But as you say, people are being trained across the system. What does that training look like? What does that mean? Or Chris, go ahead and answer that. What is it from your perspective?
Much of it is targeted on issues of either Violence Against Women Act or Title IX. There is another dimension, which is the overall creation of safe campuses in general. And so each campus, to a large extent, has a different characteristic to it. Manoa obviously has its own Title IX coordinator currently. There has been a great deal of training going on department by department at Manoa. This is being reflected also in the community colleges. However, more and more faculty are raising the issues of how do we create safe campuses in general. It goes well beyond the issue of sexual assault. And I just note that each of our campuses is different. We have urban campuses like Honolulu Community College. Their issues of campus safety are considerably broader than many of our other campuses like Windward or Leeward, and it is because of where they are located. It's a gritty community, and they have challenges that other campuses don't
have.
So
just very briefly, because I want to get to more callers, and if you want to call us, 941-3689, a few more minutes to talk about the future of UH, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Because of the geographic differences of the campuses, and as you say, some are more gritty than others, the training then has to be more sensitive to individual campuses than a one-size-fits-all. Is that what's happening now?
I think it's moving in that direction. Clearly, the institution has had a need to be responsive to federal mandate. And having been involved in many of the discussions on the current policies, actually UHPA and the university worked for close to 18 months dealing with the policies that the institution needed to be able to comply both with the collective bargaining law as well as the federal law and looking at impact on all employees. So we are now stepping out and saying that there are other areas we have to address, which is the more general arena of campus safety.
All right. Let's take a few more callers. We're going to go to Cecile calling us from Hawaii Kai. Aloha, Cecile. Thank you for your patience.
Yes. Hi.
Hi there. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I was wondering about foreign students. As the Asian countries are able to send, you know, to afford to send their children to schools in universities abroad, I wonder, I would imagine that we should be able to take more of them here in Hawaii. And I've seen, I used to live in New York, New Jersey, and I've seen a lot of students from Asia come and study there. I wonder what we're doing to encourage them to come here, if there is any program or if we see any increase.
All right, let me get an answer because I'm watching David Lasseter nod his head at you. Go ahead.
So my boss, Randy Moore, mentioned earlier our strategic directions, and one of which is increasing our becoming a higher performance organization. And part of that, and I mentioned earlier, is identifying other revenue sources. And I want to say that international students do really two things for us. One is the revenue. We can't deny that in this era where we're seeking other sources of funding in as we struggle with state funding and don't want to increase tuition to unaffordable levels. But international students also bring a rich diversity to our campuses that is very valuable for our students, especially our local students. So our campuses work together and individually to recruit. Our poster child in many ways is Kapi'olani Community College. Between 35 and 45% of the tuition revenue is actually coming from international students at that campus.
All right. Now we're coming up to almost the end of the program. And I want to ask you, because we've had a couple of touchings of this next subject on throughout the hour, looking at differences of campuses. You brought that up as looking at how to make safe campuses, Chris Hanselman, and earlier, David Lasseter, you were talking about, you know, differences, well, Hilo and what is happening on the Big Island with sports may be very different than what's happening certainly at UH Manoa. So if there are all these differences, how do you create some sense of parity of services to the student and being able to have the campuses feel a sense of almost equality with each other and not feel that everything is and all the attention always flows to Manoa?
You know, we had our caller earlier who talked about community colleges. We have a fabulous community college system. I think one of the best in the country. We have UH Manoa, which is a great research university. We have UH Hilo and our newest startup campus, UH West Oahu, are distinctive and have incredible positive impact on the communities they serve. You can see what West Oahu is doing. Each of them are distinctive, and it's sort of like asking,
who's
which of your children do you love best? they're all really special. And my job as the head of the UH system is really to help keep all the pieces working together for the benefit of our students and the community across the entire state. We cannot duplicate everything on every island or even in every part of every island. And the work that has taken place over the past, going back over 20 years, to begin to have us working together more as a system to serve students better, to serve the community better, and to achieve operating efficiencies beyond what we would have if each of our 10 campuses had to do everything for themselves. We've been remarkably successful.
Chris Hanselman, jump in here. You just heard David Lasser say that, you know, each campus is special and he wants them to feel special. From what you hear from faculty members, is that the same perception?
Yes and no. I think faculty, as money becomes tighter, are recognizing that each campus may be competing with other campuses where there is duplication of program, for example. And that is of a concern. I think there is also an interest in restructuring the institution itself. And, you know, there's been many, many ideas cast about what would be a more efficient system. And whether it is a triumvirate of community colleges, a state university like Hilo and Hawaii CC coming together, or whether it is Manoa and West Oahu coming together as an entity. I think there is an interest in having more precision in the issues of authority and the issues of decision making. And that's what we hear a lot about.
Randy Moore, I want to give that last one to you too.
Okay. The 10 campuses are all different. They need to be different because in the community colleges, the reason they're called community colleges is because they serve their communities. And the community on Kauai is different from the one in Pearl City, Waipahu. So the community colleges are appropriately responsible to their community. We, at the board, we are always concerned about duplication, unnecessary duplication of programs. We clearly need to have at every campus freshman math. We can say it's duplicated, but...
But there are certain things you have to
have
at every campus,
have,
but there are other things that you don't have to have at every
campus.
There
are other things where if you're on Kauai and you would like a different program, you need to use the distance learning mode. And frankly, we cannot offer every student on Kauai all the programs that Kapi'olani community...
Well, certainly not when you don't have the money
no.
to even do some of the things that you'd like to be doing now just singularly on each campus.
That's right. So differences are essential, but we don't want differences in the quality of the programs or in the transferability of the credits. So if you take a course at Leeward Community College, that course has to have the same value to the student as if it's at UH Hilo or UH Manoa. And if the student wants to transfer because their programmatic needs are not met where they are, they need to be able to carry those credits with them, and they can.
We've got just a minute left. I want to go right around the table. If we were to talk to each other in 10 years' time, what would you tell me would be a singular word that would describe the period that we're about to enter now?
Exciting.
Well, Randy Moore, you jumped right in there. Okay. David Lasner. I'll come back to you.
Creative.
All right. Chris Hanselman has one. I'll let you have the last word.
Recognized with distinction.
Distinction. Okay. All right. Thank you all so much for making the time to be here with us tonight. UH President David Lasner, UPA incoming Executive Director Chris Hanselman, thank you so much for being here. And to you too, Randy Moore, Chair of the Board of Regents. And to all of you for joining us for a live Town Square during Challenge 2015. I'll see you in just a bit, and we'll be given a number for other reasons. Thanks so much. We'll see you in just a moment.
Call in and play.